Okay. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. It's a great pleasure to be here in Athens with Capital Link and to have this opportunity to share our views on the global economic outlook, what it means for world trade, and also key commodity markets. Along the way, I'll be asking some of the big macro questions which will be affecting the shipping markets. Will industrialized economy demand finally be picking up? Is China heading for a hard landing? Are we going to see another emerging market crisis? So these are the big questions I'll be asking. In summary, yes, no, no. But I'll go into that a bit more in a bit more detail, of course. Okay, well, let's kick off with the U.S. economy, first of all. After a sharp pickup in economic growth in the second half of last year, recently we've seen a string of weaker data in the U.S. Our economic surprise index has fallen sharply, indicating that a whole string of data has been weaker than expected. Fortunately, this reflects the extreme weather conditions we've been seeing in the U.S. over recent weeks. You don't buy a car during a snowstorm. You don't build a house during a blizzard. The work we've done suggests that the impact of weather on economic activity tends to dissipate quite quickly a couple of months after the event. And we think the same will be true this time, so we expect a strong rebound in the U.S. economic data going forward. And that's especially the case because fundamentals for the U.S. economy in particular, but also for the rest of the advanced economies, remain very positive. Let's start off with private sector balance sheets. These deteriorated sharply after the financial crash in 2009. However, we've seen a noticeable recovery, and the net assets of both households and companies are now well above historical averages. So companies should be ready to invest, consumers should be ready to spend. Meanwhile, another big drag on activity, that's the fiscal consolidation we've seen over the last few years, is also lifting as we speak. The pace of consolidation is coming down, and that should take off a heavy weight off the private sector. Now, a third reason to be optimistic is that the cyclical catalysts which usually drive an economic upswing are really starting to get going. And I'm talking about company stock building, I'm talking about hiring by companies, and also capital spending. U.S. companies are indicating that they're going to really spend heavily on fixed assets going forward, and they have good reason to, because corporate profits are at their highest level since 1950. So investment is very attractive, and overall, bringing all this together, we expect US economic data to rebound, and we expect the US economy to accelerate sharply in the months ahead. Now, turning to the Eurozone, the European picture is not quite as strong. That's because banks are still in a deleveraging mode and are likely to remain in a deleveraging mode through this year. That means that credit will be less available for households and companies, and that will limit the strength of the European economic recovery. However, even in Europe, there are big positives. The sovereign debt crisis and the financial stress and uncertainty that created has well and truly lifted. And in southern Europe, we've seen structural reforms and competitiveness adjustments, which should sow the seeds for a return to economic growth. Here in Greece, for instance, we've seen labour costs falling sharply over the last few years, and which has meant that the country has regained all the competitiveness lost since the start of the euro, and that has sowed the seeds for a very strong export recovery, and we're starting to see that coming through very clearly in the economic data. Overall, we expect southern European growth to catch up with northern European growth this year and actually start to exceed it next year. And putting the picture together for the Eurozone, we think that we're going to see a moderate but ongoing recovery in economic growth. So advanced economy demand should start to lift, and that's also excellent news for the emerging markets, because emerging markets really rely on the advanced economies for their exports. If you take the example of Asia, three quarters of Asian exports outside of the region go to either the US or the Eurozone. So if advanced economy demand is picking up, you'd expect to see emerging market exports also picking up. And actually, that's exactly what we're seeing. Emerging market exports have been recovering, especially emerging Asian exports. And recently, we had Chinese export data. Chinese exports up 10% year over year in January, and that's really driven clearly by even stronger exports to the US and to the Eurozone. So this picture of stronger advanced economy demand leading to higher exports and trade is really starting to take shape. Now, turning to China, Chinese growth has been quite steady over recent quarters in the 7 to 8% area, despite all the worries about a hard landing. However, that is not to say that China does not face big challenges. It does. Of course, the Chinese authorities are trying to engineer a great transformation of the economy from an investment-led economy driven by real estate, driven by heavy industry, towards a consumer-led economy. This has big implications for the world economy as a whole. The first implication is that Chinese growth will likely be lower going forward in the 7 to 8% region, eventually actually closer to the 7% looking in the years ahead. So the days of double-digit growth rates in China are well and truly over. The second big implication is that China's demand for commodities will grow more slowly. Consumption-led growth is less commodity-intensive than investment-led growth, and that will affect especially the steel and steel raw material markets, and I'll talk a little bit more about that later. Now, the third big implication has everything to do with debt. The investment boom over recent years led to excessive leverage. We've seen a sharp build-up in debt in China, and it's going to be a big challenge for the authorities to maneuver a soft and orderly deleveraging. Having said that, that's exactly what they've managed so far. And we think that they are likely to continue to manage that process for two reasons. One is that they've got the money. They've got extraordinary financial firepower to bail out banks, to bail out companies. And they've also got the levers. Unlike in a market economy, China can control companies, can control banks, and bring them together in the smoothest way possible. And so overall, we think that despite the risks from high leverage, that the authorities will manage continued growth in the 7 to 8% area and bringing down debt gently. Of course, 7 to 8% is less than in the past, but it's still an extraordinarily strong number, which will provide continued strong support to trade and economic activity around the world. A last point on China is that we've seen some recent mixed data which have once again reignited worries. But some of the crucial indicators that we look at, electricity production shown here, but also water freight, rail freight, well, they've been holding up extremely well, and they're signalling to us that growth is remaining quite resilient. So China, a hard landing in China is one of the big risks for the world economy. Another one of the big risks relates to emerging markets as a whole. As this chart shows, we've seen an enormous capital inflow into emerging markets over the last few years, and many commentators are worried that these inflows will actually now reverse and become enormous capital outflows, leading to massive currency and financial market instability as that happens. That's seen to be a big risk. And of course, it's been playing out over the last couple of months, where we have seen some emerging market wobbles. I must say that up until now, if you look at the spread of what's happened in the emerging market currency universe, what we are not seeing is panic selling. We are seeing weakness in some currencies, the emerging markets with the weakest fundamentals, but for other currencies remain remarkably stable. And if you take our emerging market currency index as a whole, it's fallen only moderately. So we are seeing selective selling rather than panic selling. So that's one fact which is encouraging. You could say, well, we're not seeing panic selling yet, but you know, maybe that happens tomorrow. It's always difficult to forecast panic selling, by the way. What we can say is that fundamentals for emerging markets are very positive. As a whole, emerging markets have a current account surplus. That means they're exporting capital on net. That is a world of difference from the 1990s, when we saw an emerging market crisis, when emerging markets had a cumulative current account deficit, which meant they were relying on foreign capital. In addition, external debt has come down, and finally, foreign currency reserves are much higher. They're three times as high as in the 90s, and that will guard against a pure liquidity crisis. So overall, we think that another emerging market crisis, it's a risk, especially with the Fed continuing to taper its asset purchases, but we think that it's a risk which is not likely to materialize. Okay, well, let me put some numbers to those views on the global economy and trade. We think that the global economy is really set for a takeoff on the back of stronger advanced economy demand, which will feed into emerging market exports. We expect, as you can see, world trade to accelerate significantly this year and to remain at high levels in 2015. In terms of the financial markets, we think the Fed will continue to taper its asset purchases this year, but short-term interest rates are likely to remain stable at close to zero. But next year, short-term interest rates are likely to rise, and long-term interest rates will already start to move up this year in anticipation of that trend. And finally, tighter U.S. monetary policy and stronger U.S. growth is a fantastic combination for the U.S. Dollar. Okay, now just looking at what are the implications for commodity markets, you could say, well, stronger global economy, that means stronger and sharply rising commodity prices. Well, that would be a fair assumption to make, but we think that this time that's not going to be true. That's because of the supply side in many commodity markets looks extremely plentiful, and this will cap price rises. If you take oil, for instance, we do expect an increase in oil demand over the next few quarters, but this will be easily met by higher supply. Similarly, we think iron ore supply is also plentiful, and demand growth will be really quite moderate, especially from China, because the authorities will aim, and I think successfully aim, to cap the growth of real estate investment. And as you can see from the chart, Chinese demand for iron ore is intimately related to Chinese real estate investment. So demand is likely to remain relatively moderate despite the upswing in world trade, and supply will be easily enough to keep up with demand. And again, putting some numbers to those views, we think that prices for steel and steel raw materials and also oil are likely to remain quite subdued in the months and years ahead. Notice natural gas prices, which have spiked recently because of the bad weather in the US. As soon as the weather turns, so are natural gas prices. So, that's our view on the global economy. Stronger world trade growth ahead, but commodity prices likely to remain a bit more subdued. I've come to the end of my presentation. If there are any questions, I'll be happy to answer them. Okay, well, thank you very much.